What's up, Gator Nation?
Good morning, Gator Nation.
You're listening to Gator Nation.
And the Gators have the biggest lead of the day.
You're listening to Morning Edition on WUMT.
From the University of Florida, College of Journalism and Communication.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Hi, everyone. This is The Communicator, the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications podcast, where we dive into the latest in media, picking the brains of top faculty and staff around the Gator Nation. I'm Matt Abramson, Director of Media Services with Taylor Vorberger.
Hey, Gators.
And Ryan Harrell.
Hello.
Today, we're speaking with Randy Wright, the Executive Director of the Division of Media Properties at the College of Journalism. Thanks for joining us, Randy.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. So, you earned your bachelor's degree from the University of Missouri. What was your focus in your studies at that time?
It was a really interesting process and time because I had a number of different interests. I'd started in radio when I was in high school, actually doing weekend overnights, DJing at a rock station in Columbia, Missouri, which is a lot like Gainesville, Florida, really nice college town. And at the time, I was really into radio, loved radio, but had a developing interest in meteorology and television. And the University of Missouri operates an NBC commercial television affiliate as well. And I was approached about doing weekend weather. And so there was this confluence of broadcasting and weather, and all of those things kind of came together in a curriculum that I put together that included atmospheric science, communications, broadcasting, and geography and management. And so I'm kind of crazy opportunity to do exactly what I wanted to do. And so my undergrad degree was put together with all of those different components.
You were in high school?
Elementary school, actually. This is what kindergarten sounded like. No, not at all. You're nice to say that. Thank you. I don't know. It's kind of how we roll.
Well, while you were an undergrad, you became the public address stadium announcer for the Missouri men's basketball team, as well as other events, I'm sure. How did you get your foot in the door doing that? And did you anticipate doing it for 20 more years with the Tigers?
No, it was one of those life things that just kind of happened. I got a call from the director of athletics who said, "Hey, listen, I heard you on the radio. Would you consider coming over and trying out for a PA announcer for men's basketball?" And I was 19 at the time. And so why not? When you're 19, you'll go do things and not be afraid. Thankfully, I wasn't afraid. And so I went and tried and it worked out. And I'll never forget the first game that I did this because I didn't tell my parents. So this is where my family's from, too. And my dad was the general counsel for the University of Missouri system. So he was the top attorney for the Mizzou system. And they had back in her third row. And I'll never forget my mom telling the story of they were sitting there. And then all of a sudden I walked in and I sat in front of them at the table at midcourt. And she said, "What is he doing down there?" And then we started the announcements for the game and it was a lot of fun. And I turned around and just winked at my dad and he just shook his head like, "I can't believe you're doing this." So 24, 25 years, I think while we were there. So it was a lot of fun. Then started doing football about 10.
Difference from a performance standpoint between doing TV, radio, weather compared to doing live sports?
Yeah, I mean it's a lot about the environment and the audience and what you're trying to accomplish. When we're doing hurricane UFT and for all the public stations around the state of Florida and South Carolina now too, that's a very approach than when it's fourth and goal from the one and the Gators are trying to keep somebody out of the end zone and you're trying to get the crowd going. So it's all very much based on environment. It's based upon the trying to convey. And, it's those two things are like total opposites. When it's Hurricane Ian coming into Cape Coral, where A's, and they're still trying to get life back to normal down there. The way we're communicating that information through the radio, you know, on all these different radio and TV stations is totally different from the environment that, you know, that I have in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium or over in the Jag Stadium when we're doing the Jaguars.
Well, that's awesome. Can we channel a little bit of the stadium? So can you give us a little bit? Can you give us a little bit of the tease of the announcer voice? Maybe like announce Matt for us.
Oh, Matt Abramson?
Yeah, Matt Abramson.
Quarterback, maybe?
Oh, wow. Really going for it, aren't we? You going for the big contract?
I mean, the quarterback's one hit from me stepping in, so.
Abramson's pass, incomplete, and it's fourth down Gators. No, I'm sure with you, it would be first and 10 Gators.
So in 96, you joined KMIZ as operations manager and chief weathercaster. Can you tell us a little bit about this role and how the TV industry was a little bit different back then?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because at that time, I'd been doing weather for about 8-9 years. Had gone to Tulsa, Oklahoma when I graduated from Mizzou. Worked in weather down there. I did some radio stuff in Tulsa as well. Then moved to St. Louis and did the same thing. And had always kind of had a goal when I was in college and even in high school that I wanted to do radio and TV in a major market. And so, you know, getting to St. Louis, working in St. Louis was so much fun. But it was a very different time and a very different environment than what Tulsa was, or even a place like Columbia or Gainesville. So, you know, I really had kind of decided at that point that I didn't want to live my life, which is, you know, when you're doing weather on commercial television, you know, it can range from a minute and a half to, you know, if you've got severe weather, it can be 3 to 4 minutes or even longer than that. And I think what had happened was, you know, I'd gotten married. I moved back to Columbia with the idea of getting my master's degree in media management through the journalism school at Mizzou, and that I wanted to change the path more or less. And so that's why, you know, an opportunity came at the ABC and Fox affiliates in Columbia, which is KMIZ, to move into more of a management role while I continue to do some weather and severe weather. And it was a great time. It was a great move. It was a real learning experience for me and really helped put me on the path to being here at UF now, which, you know, looking back, it's hard to see the path that's before you. In fact, it's almost impossible sometimes. But now I can see, looking back, that everything that I went through and everything that I did, it was there for a reason. And the challenges that were put before me were there for a reason, too. And it was to get me here. This experience at UF has been absolutely incredible. It's been a dream for me. It's a dream for me that I never knew that I had. Does that sound weird?
No.
But it really is.
I mean, look, I'm a quarterback now, so.
We got to get your completion rate up, though.
Yeah, your dreams always come true if you try hard enough.
That's exactly right. So, it was a good time. It was a great time for our family. My wife's a veterinarian, and we have two daughters, and they were both born in Columbia. And so it was a great time for us to be there and for me to be doing the things that I was doing and my wife was doing. But what it did is it really put me in a opportunity like this came up. I was actually able to, number one, be considered for it as a legitimate candidate. And then number two, bring the experience in to do what we've been able to do here at CJC over the last 14 years.
As operations manager, what did your day-to-day look like? What were some of the biggest challenges?
You know, it's not that there were a lot of challenges. I mean, the thing about broadcasting that I've always loved is that it's always been a love. And as you all know, because of the work that you do in our media services department, it's really obvious that you love what you're doing. And that comes out in the quality of your product. It comes out in the relationships that you have and what you've developed, not only with one another as coworkers, but also with students. And, you know, when the feedback from the students that we get about media services is that, you know, they love being around you, the energy and the vibe is so positive. Well, you know, that's the way I felt about every single day, and I still do, going to quote-unquote work. To me, this is not work. I mean, this is still, it still lights a fire the way it did when I was 14 and, you know, crazily doing weekend overnights Friday night, Saturday night, midnight to 6 a.m. on the radio. I tell you, what it did was it showed me how much my parents loved me. I mean, legit. Yeah. Because they would take me downtown to this little bitty radio station in downtown Columbia, Missouri at 11:30 every Friday night, every Saturday night. And then at 6 a.m., they would come back down there and pick me up. And bumped me up to a daytime shift about 6 months later. I'm not sure, but I think, you know, my dad may have given them some incentive to put me on daytime. I don't know. I think that's not true. But for me, there's so much love in what we do and how we're doing it. And that we can do it with our students is just, I mean, it's a big bonus.
So while you're working at KMIZ, you started to pursue your master's degree in media management. What was that like?
You know, it was an interesting time. We had just had our first daughter, Brianne, who is now, you know, it's funny how time flies. You know, she's a PICU nurse at a children's hospital in St. Louis, and she's getting ready to have her first child. And so when I started my master's program, we had just had her, and she had been diagnosed with a heart defect. And first child, you know, major issue like a heart defect, and I'm, you know, pursuing a master's degree while working full time. Looking back, it was a lot. When you're going through it, you don't really think of it that way. But just balancing all of those different things, you know, it was a bit of a challenge, but at the time it didn't feel like anything other than this is just our stage in life and this is what we're doing. And I loved the instructors that I had in the master's program. There was a guy named Charlie Warner, who was, you know, a big time broadcaster from Chicago, and he had moved to Columbia, taken this position to essentially oversee the media management program in the college. And thankfully, he kind of took me under his wing. And I think that that's why now, you know, I love seeing the way you guys work with the students and how I see you take them under your wing, because I realize what a difference that made for me when I was going through, you know, a challenging and a stressful time. But I had somebody that cared, and I, you know, and I could tell, and, you know, he would say, you know, you're going to be fine. You know, you're good. You're doing great. Just keep one day at a time. And so between the day-to-day job responsibilities and then pursuing the master's, but then understanding that the most important thing was the health of this, you know, 18-month-old child that was going to have an open heart surgery. You know, that puts life in perspective pretty fast. But I was so fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of love and a lot of caring people who understood that there was more to life than a job, and there was more to life than a degree, and that you've got to have a balance of all those things to feel like you're centered. I was really lucky, very fortunate.
After your master's degree and a little bit later into your time at the station, you eventually move into the VP general manager role in 2003. What were the responsibilities and the changes in this role?
You know, I think as much as anything, you know, a director of operations role is really a day-to-day in the weeds, keep the trains running on time kind of role. While a VP general manager position, you know, you're allowed to have a little more vision. You're allowed to have a little more strategic thought in regards to how your products are positioned in the community and in the marketplace, the relationships that exist in the community and the marketplace. An operations role tends to be much more internal. Whereas, you know, I've always thought, you know, a good leader is doing everything that they can in the external workplace to develop relationships, to make sure that the people, you know, that are working at the stations have opportunities out in the marketplace to be seen, to be heard, and to amplify all of their good work. So in any really good organization, you're connected in and you know the projects that your people are working on and you're proud and you support them. And again, I like to use the word amplify, but you're amplifying their efforts and their creativity and their talent. And so that's really what I tried to do with our news products, you know, with our community service campaigns and things like that, that, you know, those things really matter when you're a broadcast station.
I'm Glenn Richards from WUFT Amplified. If you're like me, you appreciate how special the local music scene is here in North Central Florida, featuring indie rock, hip hop, bluegrass, and so much more. WUFT Amplified is Florida's music series, filmed right here in Weimer Hall. This show rocks, guys, seriously. And you might not realize that WUFT Amplified is produced entirely by UFCJC staff and students. To watch past episodes and discover your new favorite bands, check out WUFT.org/amplified.
In 2006, you founded KZWV 101.9 The Wave. What's the story behind your involvement and how much work was it to launch a radio station?
If you've ever loved radio, I mean, from the time that you were a kid, I mean, like 5-year-old kid, and to give you a sense of this, when I was 5 years old, I had a record player, and I would put the record player by my bedroom window. This is the story that I'm told, apparently. And I would open the window, and I would put the speaker for the record player. I would set it in the window, and I would broadcast to the front yard, playing records. And I have always just had this thing about radio, and I still do. I think it is the coolest thing that you can be driving down I-75, 50 miles from Gainesville, and I can hear Tommy or Allie on the Gator, or Glenn or Dana on WUFT, and they're sitting here in our facility in the middle of the UF campus. To me, there's still some magic about that. I still think that is the coolest thing. I also think it's a very powerful thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why the EFPRIN project is so important to us and our culture, is because that's where we're really making a difference. So I say that to bring it all the way back around to the fact that from the time I was a child, I've just always loved radio. And so it had always been a goal of mine and a dream of mine to own a radio station, to be a part of an ownership group. And so we put this group together, and there was an auction of frequencies that happened back then, and we bid on a frequency, and lo and behold, we got it. And so it began this multi-year process of building out a new radio station at the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, which is, if you know anything about that area, a big resort market. It's a huge lake. You know, it's essentially a city of about 120,000 people just built around a massive lake. And so it was all great and it was all good. And then the recession hit. And then you know, life becomes very real. And then you're thinking about, okay, we've got to pay our bills. And it was a great learning and growing experience. I'm still really proud of it. We ended up selling the station to a local broadcaster there shortly after I moved to Florida, but it was a great experience, hard, very challenging. But I'm still proud of what we did with that.
So speaking of moving to Florida in 2010, you joined the Gator Nation as executive director of the Division of Media Properties here at the College of Journalism and Communications. How pivotal of a time for the college was that? And how have the media properties changed since you've taken charge?
Oh, well, I don't like to think that I've taken charge. I really have looked at the time that I have been here, last 14 and a half years, you know, as a real blessing. There have been some challenging times. You know, we needed to evolve and to look at opportunities that existed not only on campus, but in the marketplace, and to seize those things and to really try to position the stations and the media properties from a mission standpoint in the strongest possible position we could, so that they would be fiscally responsible and fiscally very healthy. But then, you know, as much as anything else, and what really drew me to UF and CJC in the beginning, and still does today, is how we can make a difference for our students. And so this dual mission of you know, operating these media properties in the Gainesville-Ocala market. That's exciting and that's a lot of fun. And, you know, we're operating in both the public and in the commercial space, which is so unique and so powerful. But at the same time, then, you know, here we sit at CJC and we have over 3,000 students. I mean, this is an incredibly large college and it's very influential, especially in terms of the experiences that it can provide our students. And so one of the things that we really focused in on as quickly as possible, 2010, 2011, 2012, is creating some more defined immersive experiences or courses. And so that's a process that's taken, you know, some time to really refine. But now at this point, you know, I think it's a model. And I think it's a model because it provides students in virtually every area of our business operation of the media properties with access to this is how you do it.
And for those who don't know, what is the immersion course style?
So the immersion course is basically, I mean, I should put that back on you because, yeah, because you guys have, you know, one of the most effective ones. So like the Amplified. Talk about Amplified for a minute and how you guys put that together, because I think it's a great model to represent how powerful these immersive courses are.
Sure. Well, you know, I think we borrow from the teaching hospital mentality of we're not just instructing and testing the students, but we're putting the equipment in your hands. You're producing real world projects with real clients or participants. It's going to go out on broadcast to the community. So nothing is like just living in your portfolio. It's entirely built to give you experiences that you can take and go to a future employer and say, hey, I've done a long form show. I've done several podcast episodes. And here are the examples. So yeah, Amplified is a great example where our students were hungry to produce something interesting. And well, there's an opportunity in the community to produce a show like this where bands can come in and perform. And so we sort of bring the two together, and it gives students like Ryan right here an opportunity to be in front of the band, shoot the performance, edit the performance, and get that experience under your belt in a low stakes context where, okay, maybe I make a mistake. You've got staff double checking your work and giving you feedback.
And I think one of the things that's really cool about just the makeup of our place is that at any one time, and this is so fun when I'm, you know, I might be giving a tour to a prospective student or family or, you know, to a donor or something like that. And I always love doing these tours and walking through the college and coming on students that are in immersive experiences, doing in many cases wildly different things. But it's the same model. So while you may have Amplified going on in Studio 2 and Studio 1, I mean, there's every possibility we could be in the middle of storm coverage with EFPRIN. And our full-time meteorologists are working side by side with students in, you know, a MIT, meteorologist in training, immersion course. And they're literally 50 feet apart doing wildly different things, but the impact is the same on their potential career path. And here's the thing. It's also okay to try an immersive course and to go, that's not what I thought it was going to be. So I really don't want to go do that. But because we have such a diversity of those experiences possible, I'm going to go try this now. And I think that's what I love about our place. One of the things is that you do have this broad diversity of experiences that are possible in a real world environment, working with state of the art equipment with some of the best professionals in the country. I think that's one of the things that I feel really good that we've been able to accomplish over the last 10 years or so, is really getting that refined.
Well, I was a student here at the CJC and I went through the immersion program, and it's really awesome that you helped create it. I think it really provided a lot of good experience for our students, not just in the news and journalism, but production as well. What kind of growth have you seen of these immersion programs over the years, especially with like the news and INC?
They've really exploded. And you know, the academic coursework has always been the cornerstone of everything in the college, the degree programs. And what we, you know, have tried to do through the media properties and through the stations, you know, is to really refine the relationship that we have In terms of supporting the curriculum that's taught, in terms of supporting the faculty and providing these venues so that students can do many different things here in the college. In many places, it's internships that students have to go out and secure to get any kind of legitimate experience. Well, we really wanted to, and those are still important and still valuable, right? But what we wanted to do is we wanted to create an environment where we're operating these businesses, these stations, anyway. The university's been the licensee for WRUF Radio since 1928. I mean, 1928, right? We're coming up on a 100-year party. I mean, anniversary.
There are some great photos on the digital collections, just going back to the 20s.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. That's really cool. Now, fast forward, 90, 95 years, and WRUF is still a leading, one of the most recognizable assets that the University of Florida has, right? Anybody who's listening to Gator football from around the world, they're listening to it on WRUF. That's us. That's pretty cool. That's just one of the assets that we have in these media properties. And so what we've tried to do and been very resolute about is focusing on the immersive experiences. When professional staff is hired, I think they're hired, with the expectation from their standpoint that they're going to be able to come in and really affect the career paths of students. And it's fun to see them excited about doing that. I mean, we hired a new chief meteorologist, Tim Miller. One of the things that he said has really drawn him to joining us was the ability to do, as he puts it, everything. I can do my craft. I can, take part in EFPRIN and provide hurricane coverage for all of Florida, all of South Carolina. And I can do that while I'm also engaging students and helping them get a leg up in their career and expose them to how we do this. And so I think that that's one of the things that I actually love most about coming in. It's like, yeah, we're running professional operations, we're running businesses, and they're, financially responsible, and they're doing a good thing, right? They're meeting their mission as a business and a broadcaster in the market. But boy, the way we're able to do it with the students integrated into almost everything, I think that's a dream model.
The DMP operates several commercial and public media stations, as you mentioned. What is the importance today of public media, NPR and PBS in this case?
Well, I think that the role that we play as public media is evolving, and I think it needs to evolve. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a very positive way. When we started leaning into the public safety area in terms of the work that we do with EFPRIN, which has been 11 years ago now, I'll never forget the first meeting that we had with the Florida Public Media General Managers, which is all the leadership around the state. And when I first pitched this concept, there were probably half or more of the room that looked at me like I had 12 eyes. And a couple of people actually said, well, that's just not what we do. You just don't understand. And, I hear you. I'm the new kid on the block and we'll go slow. But as I continued to talk to people, not only within our college, but around the state, we began to see that there was a real opportunity for public media to take a leadership role as more consolidation happened in commercial media, as radio stations were manned less and less, overnights and weekends, and they were using automation. So what happens when the worst happens and there is a catastrophic hurricane or some other type of public safety event? How is the public learning firsthand about what's going on? And so it's really out of all of that that the model for EFPRIN came about, because as public broadcasters in the state of Florida, we have a very unique advantage. And that is that working together as a collaborative, we cover the entire state of Florida with our over-the-air signals. And there's nothing more resilient than over-the-air radio. During times of crisis, and we've seen this with Ian, with Irma, with Michael, the list is long, of the catastrophic events where the only thing left was over-the-air radio. Cell towers were down. Internet was down. So it's the old battery-powered radio, you know, what's old is new again, that's how people were able to receive information. And so as we've gone through a number of these events, you know, like Irma and Ian and Michael, and heard these stories from people legitimately saying that we were listening to you. And when I say you, I mean the Florida Public Media Station in that area, for instance, WGCU last year with Ian and Adalia. I mean, Ian was year before last, but Adalia, I mean, it all runs together, right? But that they were listening to WGCU, which is the public station in Southwest Florida. And to say that they were listening to you, meaning us, they were listening to the College of Journalism and Communications work here in Gainesville on WGCU in Fort Myers. And so to me, that's really exciting and energizing, because what that tells me is that public media, if public media works together and collaborates and provides content to the community that's really needed, and that can be public safety, that can be news, that can be, you know, whatever it may be, then we're fulfilling a need, and our role is going to be much more secure for the future. Yes, it's a challenging time, not only for public media, for commercial media, for any kind of traditional broadcast media, where the model is, you know, is based on advertising and underwriting. It's a much more crowded landscape now. And so we have to make sure that we're connected into our communities, that we're providing value, and mostly when it's needed most. And in Florida, unfortunately, that's hurricanes. And so that's why we've taken that leadership position in the public safety area. And it's, you know, knock on wood, it's worked really well for us.
Can you describe the structure, the model of how FPRINT operates with all the public stations in the state of Florida, and how if there's a hurricane outside in the Keys, the staff is sleeping in this building doing around the clock reporting?
Yeah, it's a pretty extraordinary experience to go through an FPRINT storm coverage. And, you know, the old saying about it takes a village, it really does take a village, because you have everything from the full-time meteorologists that are on the air to the hosts that are on the radio, helping them navigate literally what could be 90 to 100 hours of nonstop coverage for all of the stations. The way to think of this is, the work that we do here through WUFT and through the FPRINT Storm Center is really the hub of all of the content that goes out to every public radio and TV station in Florida and in South Carolina. And so as an event approaches, our team is communicating with each of those stations. We have different phases of coverage. As an event becomes more imminent, our phase of coverage will increase. And as that happens, then there's more work to be done to make sure that all the content that's needed, all the information that's needed in those areas is provided. And that's a lot of what drives us. But that is everything from meteorologists to hosts to, I mean, media services. You know, as we're providing television updates, it's the media services team that's making that happen. And so everyone working together really makes FPRINT an extraordinary story. In 2019, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting awarded WUFT and FPRINT what's called their Community Lifeline Award, which has only been given twice in the history of CPB. And that was done for the work during Irma. That doesn't happen very often, right? And, you know, here we sit in Gainesville at CJC, and it's our team making this stuff happen and doing it for massive markets. I mean, what's happening in that FPRINT Storm Center is being heard on WLRN in Miami, WUSF in Tampa, you know, WGCU in Fort Myers. And so it's really energizing to think about as we're going through one of those events and you're in hour 63 and you're on fumes and yet you're pushing and you're pushing and you're pushing, knowing that you're airing in those markets and those stations are partners and they love the work that's happening because they know it's making a difference, that's very rewarding for everybody. And I'm really proud of our team.
So the next phase of FPRINT is a new project titled Project Beacon. What is Beacon and how does it use new technology to increase safety?
So Beacon is a really fun project. There's this thing called AI. Don't know if you've heard of it.
I'm somewhat familiar.
Somewhat familiar. So the responsible use of AI, and that's a mouthful, isn't it? So what Beacon is designed to do is to be a complementary public safety tool that is being provided to every emergency management, public safety, and actually every government agency within different county jurisdictions around the state of Florida. One of the most interesting things about broadcasting that I keep coming back to time and time again is the power of the tower, right? And the power of the transmission. And I don't mean 100,000 watts. I mean the influence and the impact that that can have. And so what we're developing and deploying with Beacon in cooperation with the Florida Division of Emergency Management is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week radio channel or audio channel that's going to utilize artificial intelligence in the most responsible way to voice official alerts and advisories coming directly from emergency management or public safety agencies. So humans will not have to be involved in creating that content, will not have to be live in a studio in the middle of the night to get an alert out to the public. Beacon will broadcast those alerts automatically, working again with FEMA, the IPAWS system, which is a secure encrypted content generation system that emergency managers use to get their emergency alerts out to the public. So Beacon is tied into IPAWS. It's also tied into a system called Everbridge, which is the alert management system that every county uses, virtually every county. I think there's one or two that are still holding out and not using Everbridge. But Everbridge has been great to work with. They're the conduit as well for counties to issue these alerts and advisories about things that are happening in their community. So Beacon is a really exciting project that, there's a lot of interest beyond Florida. FEMA has expressed a lot of support for this project. And so we're excited about what the future may bring for that.
So when AI gets brought up, sometimes come up with ethical questions about people losing jobs and whatnot. So what are the primary ethical questions concerning AI in fields like radio and TV? And how does Project Beacon address those?
Well, it's interesting because, with Beacon, it's a very unique case scenario because Beacon is filling an area that is not currently active. In other words, there's no way right now for an emergency manager to communicate with the public, routinely, frequently with updates about a situation without getting on the air live in a studio. So what Beacon does is it provides a very unique and new pathway for messaging to get out to the community. So if we're utilizing artificial intelligence, and it's not generative AI, it's really the most simplistic form of AI in text to speech. Essentially, what the system is doing is it's taking an announcement that comes from, say, Alachua County Emergency Management or University of Florida Emergency Management, and it's just reading verbatim what that is. So it's not going in and saying, well, I think it would be better if we said it this way, or we should say this instead of that. That's not what Beacon does. It simply is just translating. So in the case of Beacon, AI is not replacing anything that's happening. It's creating something new that hopefully will be really influential and powerful and impactful in the community. As far as the broadcast industry is concerned, it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. And I think a lot of it is the perspective that you come to it with. I personally feel like, the big word that we've got to just constantly focus on is transparency. That however we're utilizing technology, we need to be transparent about it. And then the audience will decide what they want to accept and what they don't want to accept. We're doing some testing here right now with AI on GHQ, our student radio station, in regards to the weather forecasts that are given. And we're the first radio station in the world using this audio AI technology to do this. And it's been interesting. There are times when the AI, I think, does a pretty good job, and you listen to that and you go, that sounded pretty good. And then there are other times it's like, uh-oh, that's not what we're looking for there. And so it's, but that's also part of what we should be doing here. you know, we should be experimenting with technology. We should be trying to help broadcasters and other industry figure out how to navigate this, because it's here. It's been here, but now it's really here in regards to the industry. And I know that, the INC is very focused on, okay, well, from a news perspective, you know, what do we do in a newsroom, because they're all around the country in every single market? How do we use AI to help us do a better job, not replace a job? And so it's an interesting process. I love where we are. I love that we're comfortable being in the sandbox, as long as we know that we have to be transparent in that sandbox.
So, Randy, since moving to Florida, you've become not only the announcer for the home Gator football games, but also the Jacksonville Jags. What have you enjoyed most about continuing to announce in Florida?
I think the relationships. It's been a lot of fun to I've been very fortunate to be able to do these things. And so, you know, building the relationships through those organizations, you know, people ask me about it a lot, and you know, it's always on the weekends. So it's either Saturday or Sunday. And I think where I've finally gotten is, you know, a lot of people play golf, and this is kind of what I do on Saturdays and Sundays in the fall. And it's enjoyable. I mean, I sometimes will have, kids that'll come up and they'll spot for me, just as a fun little experience to be, you know, a part of a Gator game. I love doing the Jags games. It's a wonderful organization. I think there's something about, these small market professional teams where I don't know what it is, but it's probably no different than it is with the Green Bay Packers or, you know, the Buffalo Bills, where, you know, maybe they're kind of looked at as the underdog because they come from a small market. And the Jags are a great organization. I've loved doing that. I think I'm in my fourth year now of that. And I have a ball doing it. It's a ton of fun.
Do you have any great stories or anything that you can share with us, like a highlight?
You know, I think the most fun was the playoff game. What was it, 2 years ago with the Chargers? When I think Trevor Lawrence had thrown three interceptions or something in the first half, and they got down 27-0 or 27-7 or something like that. And I remember the guy that does the music in the stadium, he's literally like right next to me. And he and I were talking about it, and, you know, everybody in the booth was kind of bummed out and kind of down. They thought, okay, well, there's no way. And then I said, man, you gotta find something to kind of change this vibe a little bit. And he knows that I'm a huge Phil Collins and Genesis fan.
I was going to guess Steely Dan.
Well, that one too. I mean, listen, Donald Fagen, Steely Dan, Phil Collins, and Genesis. That's kind of my vibe, and I love that stuff. And so I think he knew that about me. And so, right at the beginning of the second half, right before kickoff, he pulls up In the Air Tonight.
Yes.
I mean, you saw that coming, right? Right. And the place just went nuts. And I was like, ooh, I'm kind of tingling all over. This is too much fun. And then it happened. I mean, they came back, and I mean, it was so much fun. I mean, and listen, I like to play golf. I'm not bagging on golf. I like it. I wish I had more time to do that. But during the fall on Saturdays and Sundays, that's kind of my replacement for golf. And I love doing it.
So, Randy, as we wrap up, do you have any advice for students that want to get involved in the broadcast industry, whether it's TV, radio, weather, just a piece of advice that served you?
You know, I think the thing is, don't be afraid to dream. Don't be afraid to set some goals and to go after those things. I think this is the perfect environment with wonderful people that can help push that and help you position yourself where you can actually go do those things. I don't think there's any place else in the country that's better than UF and CJC to prepare students for lots of different opportunities. And I think that's the key. There once was a time, you know, back when I was in Mizzou, when, you could be a little more singular in terms of saying, I want to do TV weather, I want to do TV sports. And then the skill set to go do those was probably simpler. Today, I won't say it's more complicated. I'll say that there's more opportunity. And with that opportunity, you need to have the skill set and the tools to go maximize every one of those opportunities, because things will happen, circumstances will arise, and if you can fulfill a need or create something around that opportunity, then all of a sudden you may have changed the trajectory of your career just like that. So get involved. I mean, if that's a thing I tell, you know, incoming students, whether they're incoming freshmen or transfer students, from day one, find an immersive experience that interests you, whether it's Amplified or whatever it may be, and get involved, because there are really cool people like you all leading those who care about them, and they're going to help them be a success.
Awesome. Randy, thank you for talking to us today. We appreciate your time.
No, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Randy.
The Communicator Podcast is a production of UF's College of Journalism and Communications. This episode was produced by Ryan Harrell. Thanks to our guest, Randy Wright, hosted by Matt Abramson, and featuring Taylor Vorberger and Ryan Harrell. Special thanks to WUFT.